Welcome to The Beach is Just the Beginning, the official podcast of the Antigua and Barbuda Tourism Authority. Join travel author Peter Moore as he discovers the people and places that make Antigua and Barbuda the must-visit destination of the Caribbean. The beach is just the beginning.
Hi, my name is Peter Moore. Welcome to our episode about sport on the islands of Antigua and Barbuda. Now, when you think of sport on Antigua and Barbuda, chances are you think of cricket or you think of sailing. That's no surprise. The islands have always punched above their weight in those disciplines. Sailing week is immense. And don't get me started about the cricketing nights. That's why we've already done a dedicated episode to each of those sports. Make sure you check them out. In this episode, however, we want to throw the spotlight on some of the island's lesser-known sports, some of the island's other sporting legends, and some of the sports you can play when you visit Antigua and Barbuda. Like golf, for example. Sir Richie Richardson, one of the above-mentioned cricketing knights, is also a very keen golfer, and in this episode he reveals his favourite courses on the islands. René Edward Ambrose gives us the lowdown on the very unexpected sport of drag racing on Antigua and how it's the girls who are leading the way. Trevor Simple Simon explains the joys of Wari, a unique board game played throughout the African diaspora and one that he is the world master of. Romeo D'Souza, horse owner and member of the Barbuda Turf Club, talks about horse racing on the island and the best time to catch the horses working out in the clear blue waters of Codrington Lagoon. And we chat with Kavinia Francis from the incredible Team Antigua Island Girls, the first all-women, all-Antiguan team to row the Atlantic. So stay tuned. It's going to be a winning episode. So Richie Richardson is one of the West Indies' greatest batsmen. He played 86 tests, captained the West Indies between 1991 and 95, and retired with a test batting average of 44.4. In 1992, he was one of Wisden's Cricketers of the Year. Now, Sir Richie is also a pretty handy golfer too, with a handicap of
8 at the moment.
And he joins me today at the 18+1 restaurant at the Cedar Valley Golf Course in Antigua to talk about his second love, maybe even his first love, golf. Hello, Sir Richie. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing? I can't believe you've flown all the way from Australia just to have an interview with me. I'm chuffed.
To shake my fist at you. Now, you were a pretty elegant batsman. What's your golf swing like?
You know, the thing is, I've never ever really done any video of myself, so I don't quite know. But it feels good at times, and most time it feels awful. But it's a game that I'm very passionate about. I started playing it about maybe about 10, 12 years ago. Actually, it started in Australia. I was invited to Australia to play in this beach cricket festival, you know, all international cricketers, you know, Dennis Lilly, Jeff Thompson, all the great players from around the world were playing in this tournament. And part of the contract stated that there's a golf day in a couple of the cities. We were playing in all the major cities around Australia. So when I looked at it, I wrote back to them and said, look, I don't mind coming, but I absolutely hate golf and I cannot sign up to come in to play golf. I'm absolutely not going to play golf. So they said, okay, no problem. We'll take out that part of the contract so you can sign. So I did that, went down to Australia. I think we were might have been Perth for the first beach cricket match and also a golf day. And they said to me, look, we know you absolutely hate golf. You don't want to play, but just come along and see what it's like, you know. So, okay, I put my shorts on and I went down, tennis shoes. A few of the guys said, look, just play, you know. I said, I don't know how to play golf. You know, I live on a golf course, but I only train on the golf course. I absolutely hate it. I said, just come and play. So I think I use two clubs throughout. I use a 4-iron and a putter throughout. And it wasn't too bad. I hit one or two decent shots, a few into the rough. I remember one time I hit one in the rough and I was going to look for it. And Jeff Thompson said, no, you can't go into there, snakes. I said, oh, I didn't know you guys have snakes. You know, but it was fun. And, you know, afterward, there was a lovely lunch, some music and prize giving. And atmosphere was absolutely wonderful. And I said, well, after all, golf ain't that bad. It's not just about hitting a ball 200 yards and walk behind it. That's how I looked at it. That would have been like early in the year, like about January or February. And then I went to England for 6 months. And when I came from England, I decided I was going to come and sign up. And as I walked in here, the manager said, come, sign here. And from that day, I found myself sitting out there like 5:30 in the morning, wait for it to be just right enough to hit my first ball. And I got hooked instantly.
Why do you think golf is popular with cricketers? I mean, Sir Viv's another big cricketer, isn't he? I think you guys had a tournament here back in January, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. My team beat his team in a playoff, myself and him. And I took him out.
You know, it's not just you guys, but a lot of cricketers seem to like golf.
Well, there's some similarity from the point of view that cricket is a very disciplined sport. But golf is even more disciplined. So even though when you're not playing cricket, you need to relax, playing golf helps you to continue to be very, very disciplined. Because if you're not disciplined, you're not going to enjoy your round of golf. So I think that's where a lot of cricketers gravitate, because it helps them to maintain that discipline that they're accustomed to. Plus, there is some form of relaxation. Of course, afterwards, the socializing afterwards is also, you know, a big thing as well.
When you played cricket, you were famous, of course, for your wide-brimmed hat. Do you have an equally distinctive hat for golf?
No, not really. No, not really. I just put on whatever cap or hat I see and just go out there and give the ball a good hard walk.
Let's talk about golf in Antigua and Barbuda. Is it a popular sport here?
Many years ago, only the elite used to play. Now, you know, if you come down here on any given afternoon during the week, great number of kids, boys and girls, practicing and playing. And in the last couple of years, four or five years, it has become really, really popular, especially amongst the juniors. The coaches around here have been doing an excellent job. To me, it's heartwarming to see these kids on the golf course playing rather than to be somewhere else doing something mischievous, or even at home on a computer or on a PlayStation or phone or something like that. I mean, it's more worthwhile getting a physical activity here and being exposed to quality coaching, and also at the same time creating an opportunity where they might get a chance to get a scholarship to further their education and to further their golfing skills as well.
So your club is this one, Cedar Valley. Are there any other golf clubs on the island?
Yes, there's Jolly Harbour. There's nine holes at Mill Reef as well, which I understand is really, really, really nice. I've never been there yet. These three are the main three. I think there might be one somewhere else. I'm not sure.
And I believe there's big plans for one on Barbuda as well.
Oh, yes. Actually, I went over there a couple of weeks ago. I went on a tour and I was blown away by what I saw. You know, obviously they just started, but what I've seen so far is just unbelievable, absolutely world class. You know, I've played at a few top courses in Australia, the UK, and that is going to be one of the best in the world based on what I've seen so far. So, you know, I'm excited about it. It's going to be great for Antigua and Barbuda. And I'm just hoping that I'll get the opportunity to play in it maybe once or twice.
Because I'm sure that
I understand it's only for the members only. And some of the properties that I see being built down there, these people look like they're multi-billionaires. So, you know, a little small fry groundling like me might not be able to, you know.
A knight of the realm. Surely they've got to open the card up for you. Now, you're saying that one's going to be a private members one. If someone comes to visit Antigua and wants to play a round of golf, they can come to, say, Cedar Valley and...
Yeah, you can call and book, but usually, you know, you just turn up and play. Obviously, you know, it's advisable to call in advance in case there might be a tournament or something happening. But usually, most people just turn up and play.
Yeah, yeah. And they can hire gear here as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They have some gear here you can rent. Yeah. We have a group that play 1 o'clock every day during the week, maybe except Monday. And then on a Saturday, we play at 12:30, and on a Sunday, we play at 10 o'clock. That's a group that I play in. You know, it's good fun. We have like $20 for the pot. That includes skins, $5 skins. Yeah. And on the weekend, it's $30. For the past 2 days, I've made some money in my investment.
And of course, for a visitor, the chance that you might bump into Sir Richie Richardson on the course, how amazing would that be?
So Viv plays more often than I am. Once he's in Antigua, you're going to see him on any given day, just about, you know, if it's during the week, 1 o'clock, you're here, you're going to see him. In the weekend, you're going to see him.
So this is his club as well?
Yeah. He doesn't live too far.
Okay.
Well.
How many tournaments are held here in Antigua and Barbuda?
I can't tell you exactly off the top of my head how many, but there's quite a lot. And especially since we have opened back up after COVID, there's been a lot because people are dying to play tournaments. People are excited about playing golf. And you have like unofficial tournaments. For instance, somebody might be having a birthday. He's going to have a tournament, a birthday tournament, and You know, people just sign up, play, you know, a few prizes, some food and drinks and stuff like that. It's pretty active, pretty active.
What would you say is the biggest tournament?
Well, we have the Antiguan Open, which is quite big. Also, I think there used to be an Eastern Caribbean tournament as well. In 2019, just before the pandemic, I had the first Sir Richie Richardson Charter Golf Tournament, which was a hit. It was actually sold out. We just didn't have enough space for people on the day. And we started planning it again for 2020. You know, it was looking really good. And then the pandemic came. Yeah. So I suspended it indefinitely. So I'm just waiting for things to settle down before I do it again.
Now, just finally, someone's come to Antigua. They've come out to Cedar Valley Golf Course. They're about to tee off. What are some of the tips? What are some insider tips you can give on playing around here?
Well, one thing about this course that everybody says, the layout is absolutely wonderful. And there's some spectacular views around, especially when you go on top of the hills. Yeah. And you can easily get carried away with a view and figure that you've got to focus on the ball. Yeah. Generally, it's a short course, but it's tough because, you know, almost every hole has a dog leg, left or right. Yeah, and there's out of bounds on both sides and many of the fairways. So it is tough. It is tough. But for me, it's enjoyable because I like a challenge. And I don't like anything easy. So when there's a challenge, my best shots are usually when it's a tough shot.
Sir Richie, what a cool guy. I love that he's got such a rivalry going on the golf course with Sir Viv. How amazing would it be playing around at Cedar Valley Course and bumping into those two guys? My next guest is Kavinia Francis, captain of the Team Antigua Island Girls, the first all-women, all-Antiguan team to row the Atlantic. I caught up with her at the Coolidge Cricket Ground, where she was getting ready for her next rowing challenge, this time in the Pacific. The 28th of January 2019 is a day that will go down in Antiguan sporting history. Actually, it will probably go down in Antiguan history full stop. That's the day the Team Antigua Island Girls became the first all-women, all-Antiguan team to complete the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Row, a race that sees teams row from La Gomera in the Canary Islands to English Harbour in Antigua. The country came to a standstill that day, and I've got Antigua Island Girl Kavinia Francis to tell me all about it. Hey Kavinia, how are you?
Hello, I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. Now, that day sounds pretty crazy. I mean, from what I heard, the whole country was there and yes. At the harbour. Government offices were closed down. Kids were sent home from school early. It just must have been amazing. What was it like rowing in that day?
You know, the burst of adrenaline that came upon us was incredible. Because imagine, we've been rowing for 47 days. You're fatigued, you're hungry, and then you see this huge sea of colors because people were wearing the colors of the flags. So we saw yellow, red, white, blue, and black. And then we just heard these cannons being shot while we were going in. A lot of vessels came to greet us as we crossed the finish line. I would think we were proud. We were proud. That would be the one word.
And it sounds like the whole country was proud of you guys as well, which is fantastic. So what I'm wondering is, who are the Team Antiguan Island Girls?
So we're just four ordinary women that decided to take on an extraordinary feat. So we have me, myself, Kavinia Francis, who was the captain of the team. We had Samara Emmanuel, Crystal Clashing, and Elvira Bell. We still have our day jobs. We were not rowers before accepting this challenge. But when the idea was brought to us, we kind of couldn't say no. We're all adventurers, competitors, doing something for charity and country. Like, there's all those factors into one moment. We had to say yes.
What was involved in getting ready for the race?
So usually people take 2 to 3 years to prepare. We, in essence, had 8.5 months. Because we were not rowers before, we were in the gym 6 days a week, working on our strength and rowing technique. And then we were on the water at least once a week for a 4 to 8 hour row. We did once a month, a longer row for weekends, because we really needed to understand the navigation systems, understand the vessel before taking on this journey. Our lives revolved around rowing during that preparation period.
And the race itself, was it more difficult than you expected, easier?
I think we had a little bit of everything. The previous team that rode before us, the Antigua team, they had the record-breaking year where they had really fast winds. The record, which still stands today from 2017, is 29 days. Nobody has come close. That was a very fast year. So we kind of went in expecting really fast winds and really rocky conditions. We did get that for maybe a week, and then it just stopped. It was flat. When it's flat, you work harder. If you can imagine, headwinds against us, currents not going in our favor. So we had a really tough, slow crossing for most of our journey. And then we also had some mechanical failures. So a little bit of what we expected and a lot of what we did not expect.
Now, of course, with your training, you can prepare for the physical challenge. How was the mental side of it? Was that unexpected, or were you able to cope with that?
We did have a few sessions, coping strategies, because we do have Crystal, who suffers from depression. We have Elvira, who is claustrophobic. So we did have strategies in the event those things did come up, but which didn't, luckily. However, I think realizing our goal is slipping away, those things realize it's going to take us a lot longer. That was more difficult. And we had a lot of really down, difficult moments. And as the captain, luckily, I was able to, you know, change the environment. What I did, since we realized our big goal was not anymore achievable, we started to have small, manageable, achievable goals. So we would have fun competitions. Who can get at least 50 miles a day in those conditions? That was a task. Because what we noticed when we were in that down state, we were not rowing as hard. So after, I was able to come up with a strategy to keep the whole team happy and fun and energized, we would have competitions.
Now, since your amazing achievement, you've become kind of role models for the country and for young girls in particular. What causes and issues have you used your fame to pursue?
So we have formed a charity, Team Island Girls, where our ultimate goal is to have a development program for young girls, just to give another avenue and opportunity to be better, get better. We've done talks around the island. We've visited schools just to keep persons motivated. And we hope to, after this, we'll be able to start an actual development program for young girls, just to give them another opportunity and avenue to be great in life.
So what's next for the Team Antigua Island Girls? I hear you've got an exciting new challenge planned for 2023.
We do. We've always said we wanted to take on another adventure for charity. We were looking at land challenges, but then the pandemic happened and this opportunity came to us that the same organizers, Atlantic Campaigns, they told us, hey guys, we're going to have an inaugural Pacific Row in 2023. What do y'all think about that? We thought about it and we've always said if we had a next opportunity, we would take it. Because like I said, we were competitive, but we had some hiccups along the way in the first row. And so we ultimately said yes. So we will be rowing the Pacific in June 2023, which goes from Monterey Bay, California, to Kauai, Hawaii.
Not a bad place to finish though.
Very true. We're looking forward to that.
Well, congratulations on all your achievements and good luck for Hawaii. I'm sure it'll be another success for you guys.
Thank you so much.
Amazing, amazing, amazing people. You cannot underestimate just how admired and loved the Team Antigua Island Girls are in Antigua and Barbuda. They're just about to head off to California for the Pacific Challenge now, and they are all over social media. We wish them the very best for that one. Now, while we're talking about sisters doing it for themselves, we've got to talk about Renee Edwards-Ambrose. She's the queen of drag racing in Antigua and Barbuda, a sport that's surprisingly popular on the islands. Renee Edwards-Ambrose is an aviation engineer and a former drag racer, and has been described as an all-round badass.
I love it.
She is the boss of Lady Horsepower Farm Racing, and in 2021 she launched Lady Mex, a workshop designed to teach women the basics of car maintenance. Renee joins me today in her home in Liberta. Hey Renee, how are you?
I am wonderful, and thanks for having me.
No, our pleasure, our pleasure. Now, from my research, it seems that you knew from an early age exactly what you wanted to do. I've read that you actually said to your mum when you were a teenager, you wanted to be an aircraft maintenance engineer, become a drag racer, and start your own team. Now you've done all that. So what was your inspiration? I mean, how did you start?
Well, from a very early age, I was really good with my hands. So I knew that what I wanted to do going forward would have had something to do with me fixing or using my hands to, you know, to build or whatever. So I know for certain that that was my passion. So straight out of high school, as you research, which you've done a wonderful job, I told, after graduation, my mother was like, okay, so what's next? So I told her exactly what I wanted to do. I said, Mom, I want to be a race car driver, engineer, pilot, and all of these things. And I completed all of that before I was 31.
Wow.
So I knew what I wanted, but I didn't grow up in an environment where we were financially able to do it all at once. So what my mom said was, hey, you have to choose one. And then we go from there. So that's where it all started. And I'm just happy that I had my parental unit that ensured that whatever it is that I wanted to do, they were supporting me 100%.
Fantastic. And now the drag racing thing really caught my attention. I mean, how did you get into drag racing on Antigua of all places as well?
Well, when I finished high school, I went straight into the engineering department at the Antigua State College. So I wanted to study automotive engineering again. And while I was there, I met a couple of guys that were into racing. I'm talking about like Brian Kelsick, the late Brian Kelsick, who's one of my mentors, Dimples and Iceman, and these different guys who are stalwarts in drag racing. So I said to myself, look, by hook or by crook, I have to get a race car some way, somehow. But of course, you have to fund it in some way, because you can't just go to a corporation and say, hey, I want a race car, and they give you from scratch. So I did some form of internship with Brian Kelsick at his mechanic shop. And there is where I saw all these race cars and so forth. And that kind of propelled me into learning more and knowing what I want to do. When I was at the racetrack, a gentleman by the name of Mervyn Bonnet from Trinidad was in Antigua. And he is a race car builder. So someone introduced me to him and I said, look, I want a race car. So he's like, so do you want one of these noisemakers, the Honda Civics and the Integras here, or do you want something that's reliable, like a Ford engine, like a V8 or a V6 engine? So I sat and I thought about it. I said, I don't want to be constantly braking with these Hondas, although I love Hondas. So I thought, listen, let me just go with that option of V8. I bought this V8 powered RX-7 from Grenada. It looked horrible when I got it the first time. It was green. It had all these stickers. It was sitting down under a mango tree or some kind of tree at that point. And I said, listen, that's my baby. And I'm going to make sure I push my energy behind getting it where I want it to be. And the rest is kind of history. By that time when I got it, we didn't have our current racetrack here in Antigua. So the next best thing closest to Antigua was Nevis. So I shipped it over there because Mr. Bonnet was over there. When you follow all of Lady Horsepower Farm on social media, on other platforms, you'd see that it went from being a car that was green and had all these stickers to hide all the rust patches to now being the Black Widow. So that's how I got into it.
Wow. So there is a racetrack now on Antigua?
Yes. We currently have the North Sound Raceway that's just across from the Serviv Stadium. That has been operational for probably 7 to 8 years under the Antiguan Barbuda Drag Racing Association, which I am the executive secretary. So I'm very much involved in what happens there currently. But before, it was the John I. 4th and 5th, which was privately owned, but that holds a lot of records. It has a lot of memories because we had persons from all over the Caribbean coming back in the day to race. But right now, it's a North Sound International Raceway.
How regular are the meetings there?
Right now, we are trying to bring back like Tension Tuesdays, which we have every Tuesdays at the track. And that is to encourage persons to use the track instead of using the streets. We find that we have a safer environment there. And again, it's to build on what we have to teach people. Because at the end of the day, if you teach the younger ones, then when we get old and gray, I mean, I'm 35, but I'm going to get there. We want to ensure that the next generation has what it takes to put Abuja where we envision it to go.
So the kids who'd be doing street racing, obviously this evening you have on the Tuesday nights, yes, is to encourage them to go out there,
yes,
get all that out of their system there in, right, a controlled environment.
Right, and to teach them safety as well, because again, when you go to any other place, they don't use helmets, they don't use whole shoes, because some of them were still racing slippers, short pants. So what we want to do is instill safety while they're at the Nassau Raceway. Let's say you come and you have a really good reaction time. You have the best reaction time off of the light, or if you have the fastest estimated time to the finish line, we can give out some form of remuneration or a gift or something to encourage more persons to do it. So I think that's the way we should really go if you want to get them there.
Now, obviously, this is Antigua. I imagine on that evening, there will be food stalls and all that sort of stuff.
Listen, we have a lady, right, that comes every time the gate is open. And she would call and say, y'all need anybody to sell hot dogs and hamburgers? So, listen, she is always there at every event. And then we'd have kid zones with bounce castles so that if some of the parents that are into racing bring their kids, they have places to go. When we do have like international events, of course, we have stalls on top of stalls on top of stalls. You know, make it interesting so people are able to ply their trade, whether it's services or food or merchandising. We try to accommodate that as well.
So if there's a visitor who's come to Antigua Barbuda and it's a race meeting, mm-hmm, they're more than welcome to come out and just experience it, yeah.
Of course, of course. And now that we are opening up a lot more, we are able to accommodate a lot more persons at the track now. You know, we want to be there and feel the vibrations of the engines and, you know, smell the burnt rubber. That does a lot for me. Smell all the race fuel, you know, just being a part of the energy.
And I'm guessing it's pretty noisy, so just follow the noise.
Just follow the noise. Listen, let me tell you, we have people that live probably like 2 miles away from the racetrack and they'll call and like, listen, y'all need to cut off by 7 o'clock because I need to sleep, you know? So people know when things are happening, you know?
Now, I wanted to talk to you about another little project of yours, which is Lady Mech's workshops, mm-hmm, which are special classes for women to learn about cars.
Yes.
And it sounds like it will help empower women and give them independence. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Okay, so the Lady Mech's workshop initiative started on the Lady Horsepower Farm because Lady Horsepower Farm started off as an all-female drag racing team. So, of course, me being the female racer, I had a female mechanic as well. So one of the things we thought, you know, a lot of women are not educated on how to take care of their cars. And it's preventive maintenance, not necessarily reactive maintenance. So if you can just learn, okay, you have your oil that you need to change, how to change your wheel in the event you get a flat. How can we ensure that you can do this safely so that you don't have to ask anybody for anything? You don't have to call your dad, call your husband, your significant other. You know what I mean? So we saw it fit to have that type of initiative. When we first started, we started off by doing it for free with nonprofit or non-governmental organizations. And then I looked at it, I said, yeah, man, we can do a lot more with this. As of last year, I partnered with an insurance company and we actually started an online class platform. So we've gone digital. The vision going forward is to have a mechanic shop that's owned and operated for women by women.
Now, finally, I know you're a big fan of all sports.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if there was one sporting event or activity that every visitor should try and get along to when they visit the island.
Cricket.
Okay.
Cricket. And full disclosure, I'm actually working on a project for women in cricket as well. But outside of that, I think that when you hear West Indies play, like, people go ballistic. It's like a party atmosphere. If persons want to come to Antigua and enjoy a specific sport outside of motorsports, cricket is the way to go, for sure.
I just love the idea of drag racing on Antigua. I did get to check out the track, but sadly there weren't any meetings organised while I was there. I didn't get to pitch my idea to the organisers either, a drag race between tourists in rental cars. Maybe next time. Now for something a bit more cerebral, the sport of worry. Spend any time in Antigua and Barbuda and you'll see people from all walks of life hunched over a wooden board, competing with each other to move seeds from one bowl to another. It's a game that originally came from Africa and is played all around the world, and Antiguans and Barbudans are pretty good at it. One of them in particular, Trevor Simple Simon. I caught up with the Grandmaster himself in St. John's to get the scoop on this intriguing sport. Wari is the national game of Antigua and Barbuda, a simple but surprisingly sophisticated game played on a wooden board where players attempt to capture their opponent's seeds known as knickers. You'll spot people playing it all across the islands, pretty much like people play dominoes and checkers and mahjong in other places around the world. In Antigua, the game is taken very seriously. The game even features in a local proverb, "When you play Wari with God, you get no seed." Now, there are annual tournaments on the island where best players pit their wits against each other, and the winners head overseas to represent the country against the finest players in the world. The undisputed master of Wari in Antigua is Trevor Simple Simon. He was the world champion between 1999 and 2002. He won all the international tournaments held at the MSO London from 1998 to 2000, and he was declared Grandmaster by the Mind Sports Council in 1999. His mantra, that the end game starts when there are 15 seeds left, has been taken as gospel by young players across the island. Such is Trevor's fame that he appeared in the local thriller No Seed, a very popular movie when it came out here in Antigua. He retired from the sport in 2001 to give other players a chance, but continues to play a huge role in the sport in Antigua, and he joins me today. Hi, Trevor. How are you?
I'm good, Peter. Nice to meet you.
So Wari is a Mandela game. What is a Mandela
Mancala,
game?
Mancala, part of the Mancala family of games. We describe Wari as an African mathematical board game. The game is very simple to learn, but is very difficult to master. It has lots of strategies involved in playing the game. The real object of the game is really to capture 25 seeds before your opponent. But along the way, there are lots of strategy that you deploy to get to that point.
So what's the history and origin of it?
The history of Wari is African in origin. And as you may know, Antigua's population was largely made up of the Africans. Our ancestors came from different parts of Africa, Benin, West Africa, Ghana, Nigeria. So that sport was brought here by our ancestral relatives. And the game is as old as time. It's the oldest board game known to man. The reason why it has withstood the test of time is that it's a brilliant game. It's simple to learn, children could play it, but that's at the highest level, they're much, much more to the game than just what you see.
So what do you need to play Wari?
You need to be able to focus, concentration, and of course, you have to be able to problem solve, because everything about Wari is problem solving.
Physically, you need the wooden board. Does that have a special name?
The board, they use different types of wood to make the board. We like the mahogany, because when you use the mahogany to make the board lasts. And so most of the master players would own a mahogany board in Antigua.
But of course, in its simplest form, kids play it with like just making holes in the dirt, don't they?
That's right.
You could dig holes in the ground and play it simply. Or you could even play it using some other device. Some people use marbles. But we believe to play Wari, you must play with the Cassiopeia crystal plant. It has a special feel. It has a special sound. And we always recommend that you use the Cassiopeia seeds.
So what is the objective of the game? You start the game with a certain number of seeds in each little bowl, really, isn't it?
Yeah. There are 48 seeds on the board. The board is like divided in two halves, six hollows on your side, six hollows on my side. Each hollow contains four seeds. And the objective of the game is to get one more than the amount you start with. You start out playing with 24 seeds, four seeds in six hollows. You the same, and the game is played anti-clockwise. But the object of the game is to capture seeds and capture 25 seeds before your opponent does. You could also wind up with a draw where both players end up with 24 seeds. But primarily, that's your objective when you play. And whatever strategies you devise is towards that end, to get 25 seats before your opponent.
And where is it played? I mean, I went past a bus stop in Bolens the other day, and there were some guys sitting in the bus stop having a game out of the rain. Where does it get played?
The game is played in a number of areas in Antigua. In Point, there's an area they call Baker's Corner, where you'll find around-the-clock players playing there. At the West Bus Station, near the King George Field, you'll find guys playing there 24-7. In Liberta, where I'm from, the same thing. In Pickett's, in Willie Keys, right across the island, wherever you go, you'll find Warri being played.
And if you were a visitor to Antigua and you saw these guys, would they be okay with you coming up and just sort of watching them play?
Oh, they like that. Yeah. They like when visitors come and inquire, of course, and we also take the opportunity to teach them as well.
Fantastic. And of course, it's not just a popular pastime. There are some serious tournaments as well, aren't there?
Yes. We've had some tournaments over the years, not only local, but international. We had an international tournament here in 2013. We have participated in international tournaments from 1997.
Now, of course, Warri has taken you all over the world. Did you have any fierce rivals on the international stage? I hear Ibrahim Abubakar from Ghana was pretty tough. His nickname was the Warri Killer.
I've met him once in competition. Well, twice, I should say, in friendlies. And I've beaten him both times. But he's a pretty good player. Out of Ghana and Nigeria, you have some pretty, pretty good players. Some of the best players in the world are found in Nigeria and Ghana.
Now, speaking of nicknames, yours is Simple, as in Trevor Simple Simon. Was that because you made the game look so easy?
Actually, a lot of folks think that the name Simple was given to me because of my skill in Warri. But it has nothing to do with Warri at all. I gained that nickname when I was playing youth cricket for Leeward Islands. A guy from Jamaica actually thought I was always quiet. And he said, "You're real quiet. You like a simple Simon." And I'm saying, "I am Simon." So from that day that he called me Simple, way back in the late 70s when we played under 19 youth cricket, he has given me that nickname, and that name has stuck with me since.
So as we mentioned at the top, you actually featured in a local movie, No Seed.
Yeah.
What was your role in the movie?
It was just to play a game against a chap from Montserrat. It was just all fun, entertainment. If you notice in that movie, there were lots of talking while we were playing. The whole objective there was that the guy I was playing against wasn't supposed to capture any seeds during the time that we were playing. And hence the name
No Seed.
No Seed. Yeah.
And that was quite popular, that movie as well, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was.
Did sort of people stop you on the street and say, "Hey, I saw you in the movie"?
Oh, my nieces and nephews went crazy every time they watched the movie. "Oh, look, Uncle Trevor playing."
Now, you're still very active in the sport, of course. What's your involvement these days?
At the moment, we have an academy where we teach primarily school children, but anyone from the community can come at the public library on Saturdays from 1 to 4. We teach people how to play the game of Warri. And it is a hope that we'll continue to do that for a long time.
What is it that you love about Warri?
Everything. Warri is a game of life. Warri teaches you discipline, concentration, focus, planning. All positive attributes about the game. It's also a very relaxing game. And if you notice about Warri, unlike chess and other sports, the game of Warri, all the seeds on the board have equal value. There's no hierarchy. They must work together. They intertwine all the time. They're compelled to work together, even though they might be on the opposition side. So Warri is really a game of life. And that's one of the things I like about the game. It teaches you lots of things.
I just have one question. If there was one place on the island where you would say to a visitor, "Look, if you go here, you'll, one, definitely find people playing it, and two, definitely they will be very interested in helping you out and teaching you how to do it."
At the West Bus Station. That's on the west side of the island. It's near the marketplace. towards Perry Bay. You can't miss it. Once you hit that road, you'll see guys playing dominoes, worry, draft.
Any time of day and night?
Any time of day and night, you pass there, you'll find guys playing.
And they'll teach you how to do it and show you the skills.
Yeah. Once you're interested in learning, they'll teach you how to play the game.
I had a go at Wari while I was in Antigua, and it's a great game. I didn't play with Trevor. I played with one of the guys working at the resort I was staying at. I suspect he took it easy on me. I didn't win, but I didn't get flogged either. Oh, and here's a top tip. A Wari board makes a brilliant souvenir to take back home. Now to horse racing, and in particular, horse racing on the tiny island of Barbuda. You've probably seen those amazing photos of horses paddling in the crystal clear waters of Codrington Harbour with their trainers swimming beside them. But did you know that horse racing is the biggest sport on the island? I caught up with Romeo D'Souza, horse owner and member of the Barbuda Turf Club, to get the lowdown on the sport of kings on one of the Caribbean's tiniest islands. Hi Romeo, how are you today?
I'm good today.
Now, horse racing on Barbuda, I mean, it's such a tiny island, but it's a really important part of life there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is the number one sport here on the island right now.
Fantastic, fantastic. And of course, I've seen those photos as well where people who own the horses take them down to Codrington, down to the harbour there, and basically the horses swim in the water and get some conditioning.
Yeah, that's a part of the exercise also for the horses.
It's such an incredible thing to see because it's that amazing blue water and the horses are there and the owners and the jockeys are on their back. Fantastic. So how often are the races held?
Well, normally we held races every 2 weeks, but there are times when we go further.
Okay, you have them more often sometimes.
Yeah.
Cool. And the race course, it's quite close to the airport, isn't it?
Yeah, and the hospital.
And what's the name of the track?
Coronation Park.
Coronation Park. Okay. Is there a particular day that the races are held?
Not really. We normally have race on Sundays. And if it's like Easter, we have it on Easter Sunday or the Sunday before, if the Easter would fall on a Sunday.
And is there prize money or is it just for the accolades?
Well, yeah, we do have prize money. The gate fee goes towards the prize. And there are times when we look sponsors to help.
So how many races would there be at a usual meeting?
Normally we have 5 to 6 races.
And how many horses in each race?
Well, there are times when we have 5 horses in a race. Normally we have to cater for the jockeys because we don't have much jockeys on the island.
So what will happen is the same jockeys will be in each race but on different horses, is that right?
Right.
So who's the best jockey on the island at the moment?
Well, at the moment we have Dwight Jacob. He's the best jockey on the island, right?
Who's the best horse on the island?
Well, right now, Abisha, he has a horse, Obiman.
Okay, and you'd say he's the best?
Yeah, right, at the moment. But my brother have one also that runs good, Barbuda Mystic.
Are there stables on the island as well? Like, how many horses are there? I mean, I was over last February in Barbuda, and I remember there's a lot of horses wandering around the island, but I'm guessing that the racehorses must be in a stable somewhere.
Yeah, they are stable at the track. Some people have them at their home, or most of them are at the track.
Now, I've also seen some photos of the races. It seems some of the jockeys have what you'd imagine a jockey would wear. But then I saw some pictures of some guys just in shorts and barefoot, just on a horse.
Well, yeah, they're like the mongrel, the Creole horses.
Okay. So they just sort of jump on and have a race. That sounds cool.
Yeah, just for excitement.
So how much would it cost to go to the races?
$15 for the adult and $5 for children.
And of course, from what I can gather as well, it's quite the atmosphere there. There's food, there's drink, there's all that kind of stuff as well, isn't there?
Well, yeah, we have vendors that come and sell at the track also.
For someone who's visiting Barbuda and the races are on, do you think it's something they must go and see to get a sense of like the island life?
Very much so.
Choose a horse, find someone who might take a bet off you and enjoy some food and stuff.
Right, right.
What kind of food is on offer? Because I know Barbuda's famous for its lobsters, for example. What's the sort of stuff that you can find at the races?
On the Sunday, you know, normally Sunday dinner would be big at home. So at the race now, we only have maybe a grill, chicken on the grill and stuff like that. Not really big. But Saturday would be, you'd have food like lobster, as you said, and different stuff, chicken on the grill and so.
And plenty to drink, I'm guessing, rum and beer and all the usual.
Yeah, plenty, plenty drink.
Cool. No, it sounds really exciting. Now, if someone's visiting Barbuda, how can they find out if there's a race on? Do you have a Facebook page or do posters go up around the island? How do people know when the races are on?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page that we post the races on. And, well, you know, Barbuda is a small place, so we get it around.
You just know. You just know when it's on. Now, before we were talking about how the horses get taken down to Codrington Harbour there and go swimming for, as part of their conditioning, does that happen every morning or is there a particular day if people wanted to see that, a particular time? What would be the best time to, and day to go down and see the horses working out in the water?
There are guys that set in the program of the exercise. So I can't say exactly. It's not something that everybody do at the same time.
So you could be just going out to see the Frigate Bird Sanctuary, for example, and you might get lucky and see the horses training.
Yeah. And you might get lucky, yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, now, just to finish up, if you're on the island, you've got to go. Now, just again for listeners, the best jockey is, at the moment?
Dwight Jacob.
Dwight Jacobs. And the best horse is?
That's the Obi-Man.
Obi-Man. There you go. So if you're gonna put any money on a race, make sure it's that guy on that horse.
Well, no, he don't ride that horse.
Oh, what? Okay.
He rides a bad mystic bike.
Definitely one for the bucket list. Go to a horse race on Barbuda. Sadly, we've come to the end of our episode. Don't forget to check out the episode notes for more information about each of the guests, including the Facebook page for the Barbuda Turf Club. And we've also come to the end of our first season of the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure introducing you to Antigua and Barbuda and the people that make these islands so magical. I hope you've been inspired to visit. And not just visit, but to get out and explore the islands as well. It really is like they say. On Antigua and Barbuda, the beach is just the beginning.
The Beach is Just the Beginning is produced and presented by Peter Moore for the Antigua and Barbuda Tourism Authority. For more information and inspiration about visiting Antigua and Barbuda, drop by visitantiguabarbuda.com.